For November the 13th, 2020, we talk about Teardown, Manifold Garden, and we ask you what it would be like if your favorite game hero was a villain. Welcome to Level 349. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prentice.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back after we took a week for me to watch election stuff and
everybody to kind of, like, everybody in the U.S. anyway, to kind of lose their minds a little bit, it felt like.
Yes, for all of us to collectively clench.
It was good to not record on Tuesday night.
Yes.
That would have been a repeat.
I still didn't sleep. I didn't sleep like all week, so I'm still dragging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of did the opposite. I slept too much because I wanted to fast forward time. So there was that. That's also what you do when you're very depressed. So that's fun. Yeah. But thank you for thank you for understanding us being off last week.
Tuesday.
Yeah,
I had two beers. I had a happy, tasty beer, and then I had a dangerous high alcohol content beer. And so that was going to be the beer that I drank if things looked like really bad. Repeat of 4 years ago, and I was happy that I held on. I just had the one beer, slept it off. Woke up, felt great.
Yeah. After last time, I decided not to indulge. That was the sickest I had been. So
I did not imbibe whatsoever. And like I actually Tuesday was Dave's birthday, so I was trying to spend time and hang out with him and think about literally anything else, so we're not sitting there hovering on the election stuff. So but after that, it's like I still was laying in bed and I wasn't even thinking about election stuff. I was just laying in bed unable, because like you get to the point where you're subconscious and your body is just like wired because it knows, it's like, yeah. You can try to trick it and be like,
yeah,
no, I am going to just go to sleep. No, you're not going to go to sleep.
Yeah,
you're going to sit up and
your body is going to be bracing for that blow. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my boat. And that was my boat like all week. And I'm like, I am exhausted. I need sleep. And I couldn't sleep. And then Saturday came. And then like I woke up and I happened to check my phone for just a second when I, woke up for a second. And then I saw the news of how the election panned out. And then I couldn't go to sleep because I was happy. And so I still haven't slept. So
yeah. Oh, well, it'll come eventually. Eventually.
Yeah.
Did either of you here have cheering in your city on Saturday?
I'm too far away from the center of the city to have heard it anyway, because it's good 20 miles away from where I live. So I don't know.
Oh, how about you, Ben?
Yeah, it was around like 9:30 or so when news broke. So like people were cheering. That was like my alarm clock.
Yeah.
I mean, after a summer of hearing the helicopters and stuff like that, obviously that problem isn't fixed. This is a long, slow road, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But after, all the sounds that you have heard this summer, hearing people actually cheering and banging pots and pans is probably good.
Yes, yeah. For the psyche. Yes,
watching the videos of that, just like Twitter for a while was just a wall of people posting video of the cities where they lived. It was all over the world too, and so like watching that and hearing the cheers was actually, it felt very good, restorative.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I came out of Twitter hiding with a nice symmetric tweet from 4 years ago. I was really happy about.
This was really good. I liked the tweet, but Jala posted the screenshot, and that's when I got it. On election night 2016, you wrote "fuh," and then when it was announced, what did you say? Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Well, that's why I had to post. And I was like, guys,
playing
Ben's one tweet every several years has occurred. This is momentous. I am
happy to dedicate one to Trump getting kicked out of office.
So,
Jala, how are you?
I've been doing a lot of dancing. Like I said, the last time I was on, I had Halloween choreographies. I had two Grumpy Bear outfits, but one of them was a little too warm because we're almost in summer weather still here.
Summer Houston weather.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it's hot as hell and it's humid. So I'm not going to wear the warm and furry Grumpy Bear outfits. So instead I went with Spider-Man. So I was Spider-Man and... Grumpy Bear alternately on those two choreography days that I did those dancing. And then I had class the next day after that, so I danced the entire weekend. And then I was approved for starting intermediate pole, so I've been doing it for like 4 months and I'm moving on up.
Nice.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's tomorrow is my first class, so I'm not like nervous or anything. I'm excited, but I'm also like, I'm tired. This is gonna be interesting.
Holding yourself up on a pole by your legs, probably. Sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it can be definitely a lot of things.
I know nothing about like the pole dancing like culture, but I hope that it's like karate where it's like you get a black pole and then you get like a gold pole.
Right.
Like you work your way up.
Well, nice. You get black and blue doing a lot of this. I'm like, it's hard to hold yourself up with your knee on the pole or whatever. I mean, I can do it, but it's difficult.
I cannot.
Here's a couple. I dropped in the backstage a couple of photos of a couple of poses from like Sunday's class.
Yeah.
Crucifix and then an outside leg hang.
Wow.
You're just hanging from your knee. So. Yeah.
No, that looks implausible. That's not impossible, but I'm seeing you do it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I do with myself.
Nice. So. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing all right. We're working on this has been an episode of threes. I'm working on a project. The first 3 days of the work week is just like a one-off thing with two other people at work. So that's been like my main focus for the week. So that's been fun. It's a hackathon, quote unquote.
Oh, nice.
So it's going pretty well. So I think that'll be done by tomorrow. So I'm happy about that. This sounds like a stand-up and not like how I've actually been doing this week. So I'm sorry about that. But
no, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's exciting about birthday time for like everybody's birthdays.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, you got yours coming up. Mine's next week. Yeah. I don't have any plans or anything. notable. Notable the mid-November corridor.
Cool. I can reskin the Discord server and we can make it for your birthday for the week following.
There's no need to do that.
I think Cole would have like a conniption fit. That's too many people, too many things going on.
Too many people, no thank you. I think my birthday falls on a Friday. I'm probably just gonna stream. I'll probably do something
for you.
So okay. That'll be okay. There's no reason that the routine has to be upset. There's no reason to be upset. So
I like that you had champagne on the stream over the weekend, the previous weekend as well.
I did, yeah. I streamed Teardown, which is a game I'll talk about because it's very good. But I waited till a bunch of people got in, and I popped a bottle. That cork around here somewhere. It wasn't nice Dottie champagne. It wasn't nice champagne. It was just whatever was at the corner store. Yeah, I haven't been doing too much. I was a little bit frustrated because my Xbox Series X was supposed to get here today, but it didn't. Ooh. So it's going to be here tomorrow. So
don't worry about
ooh.
It.
Yeah, I wouldn't have. I wouldn't it's have. Not, go ahead.
It's not like Cyberpunk 2077 is out yet, so it doesn't matter.
Yep, but no, otherwise I've just been taking care of my kitties, and that is all, you know.
Dude, real talk, that picture of both of them together, so cute.
Oh, it's wonderful, the having both of them just like curl up and share that little bed in the window. It's funny because I catch them sharing that like it's no big deal, but they cannot both be on the couch at the same time.
There's boundaries, Cole.
Yes. I mean, well, it's because Dottie, the small one, the kitten, she can't help herself from attacking Greta's tail. And then Greta kicks her off of the couch and like plays goalkeeper to keep her off of it. So they can share the bed and the sunbeam, I think, because they both like the sunbeam. But the second you have this massive couch, they cannot share the territory, which is very fun.
It's probably a life lesson in there somewhere.
I think so. Well, that sounds like how we've been doing. This is probably going to be a really short episode because we've established this is the most efficient of the three styles.
The most business triad of the group.
Yes. No nonsense. Some nonsense. Some nonsense is fine. Regardless of how efficient we are, we do have a regular kind of show to do. We have the grind, we have the multiplayer, then we have the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about what we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, it's been the longest since you have been here, so I will throw it to you.
Kale. So, I've got three different games to talk about. The first one that I will talk about is Aragami. Somebody bought this for me, and I don't remember who. My apologies. Somebody gave it to me, but it was in the backlog, like downloaded on my computer, just sitting there in my favorites, like at the top of the list, because it's an A game not being played because I look at my Steam and lose my sense of reality. But anyway, I finally got to it. And at first glance, this looks like 1000% Jala's kind of game. The basic premise is that you are a vengeful spirit summoned by someone whose clan was wiped out by a rival clan. Your goal is, I guess, to go kill everybody because you warp around, you hide in the shadows and hunt down and assassinate people. So I guess you just have to go murder everybody in the other clan. You do have the option to go through levels without killing anybody, but I'm a vengeful spirit and I'm Jala. I can't just let any one of those people live. That's not how I roll.
What kind of message does that send? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, like, come on. That's ridiculous. So, anyway, this also has multiplayer. You can co-op it with a friend. And basically, they just have a second version, you know, second little character that looks exactly like you. So that's all. It's not like any kind of a narrative thing. They just put it in their freaking gameplay consideration. So mechanically, your move set is at the start of the game very simple. You can crouch, run, attack, and warp within a limited range. You do have to remain in the shadows to recharge your power meter to warp, and if you hang out in the light too long, your power starts to drain really fast. The main problem that I have with this game is that everybody is one hit kill. So if you get smacked by the Kaiho's light wave attack, you die and you have to start over. So what this ends up presenting as is a storylight stealth action puzzle game. And while I don't necessarily mind storylight games, and I'm a fan of stealth action and puzzle games individually, I don't apparently like it when it's a stealth action puzzle game. Kind of feel like pick a lane, because the action is lacking and the puzzle is lacking. So you just get a mediocre mix of two things without either itch being scratched, you know?
Yeah.
So I played a little bit of this. I played a little bit solo and I played a little bit with Dave, and I had my fill of it. I'm like, okay, I see this is the thing. I didn't have, you know, a super exciting time with it because it was just really simple. And I know that you could unlock other abilities as you go through the game. I don't know if it's just like one of those instances where Jala bounces off of it because it's not what Jala wants at that time, because that happens, and then I'll go back to it and then some other time it's fine. Right. But like at this particular point, like I just did not have any interest in pursuing going further in that game at this point. So it seems like it's, you know, plays fine. It's not like there's a problem with how it plays, but it's just, I guess maybe the genre that I was looking for or feeling like playing at that time wasn't what I ended up getting out of that game. So, yeah. You know, like that might be something for like a slightly more reflective kind of mood. Not quite like the I need a visual novel or an adventure game. I'm tired. I don't want to do anything. But mm-hmm. like, you know, a little bit more considered pacing, you know, because it's not, you know, a Dishonored style murdering people warping around. It's more of a puzzle game than that. So.
Yeah. This is first person, you said?
Third person.
Third person.
Yeah, third person.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the shadow dragon that comes out and murders people? Because that looks interesting.
Yeah. I didn't see the shadow dragon in the game, so dang. I can't talk about the shadow dragon.
All right.
I didn't get that far.
I always think like, okay, like Origami, where do I recognize that from? Oh, the key art reminds me of Mark of the Ninja.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a good game that I really enjoy. And I whenever I see key art that resembles something that I enjoy, I'm always suspicious. I'm like, what kind of catfishing are you trying to do? How quick is the like iteration if you die?
It just resets pretty quickly at the beginning of the, but it's at the beginning of the level, no matter where you were in the level. Oh. So
okay,
so that's not cool. I mean, like there's segments. So like once you clear a room, then I think it like will restart you from the beginning of the next room if you die in the next room. Mm-hmm. But like whatever progress you've made in that one particular section,
right?
You know, all or nothing on that section. But it does have save points insofar as like kind of like quadrants of the level or whatever. But mm-hmm. that's about it. So
nice. Huh. Origami.
Stealth mm-hmm. games are dicey. You gotta do them well.
Yeah, and like I was in the mood for a stealth killing game because I was playing all the Sniper Elite stuff and, you know, not really sniping a whole bunch, but I was sneaking around for a little while before I went crazy face on everybody. And that was exciting. But like this wasn't the same style of thing.
Right.
So if you're looking for something that's kind of got some sort of action-ish elements, but like it's more of a puzzle game than it is action, then I would say, you know, give it a shot if it's on sale or something, because I think it goes on sale for really, really cheap.
Mm.
But anyway, so that's what I'm going to say about that. I don't know that I'm going to be going back to it anytime soon. I may pick it up at some random point 2 years from now and go, guys.
Oh man, remember this? Remember this game that I talked about for one episode? I love it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's happened. I bounced off stuff and then come back and been mm-hmm. like, I really like it. So yeah. I don't know. Well, that's all I got to say about that one for now, though.
Cool.
Next one is speed dating for ghosts.
I see you posting pictures
all
of this.
Kinds of, yeah. of videos and stuff from it.
What the hell?
It's a narrative game by Copy Chaser Games, which is two guys, one of whom worked on titles like Control, Dragon Age, and Mass Effect. This game is on Switch, Steam, and itch.io.
Mm-hmm.
You meet 12 different ghosts, and after the speed dating rounds, you can pick which one to go on a date with if you made a good impression and they like you too. So you can actually like screw yourself out of being able to see that story path if you don't, you know, make a good impression on the ghost. So okay. There are vengeful spirits. The vengeful spirit in particular is named Gary.
Okay.
Mischievous spirits. Friendly and compassionate spirits. The friendliest spirit you could possibly come across is actually a dog.
That
and
lines
the dog,
up.
The dog's name is Dave. So I was having a field day. I was like, oh my god, this is hilarious. So anyway, the discussions that you have during the speed dating portions range from being really frank or touching conversations about death and its consequences, like you know, happy memories people had, or you know, how things are better and like all the things that they're empowered to do now, or things like that. Or it can be really dark and sinister, or depressing, that two extremely silly things like Spooky Peter, who was my first date.
Yeah.
Spooky Peter is pretty awesome. Like, it just you need to go look at Spooky Peter. Or there's also a ghost with a football lodged in his head. So he died by football to his head, apparently.
Isn't that always the way?
So anyway, trigger warning, though, about anything related to death. As you might imagine about speed dating for ghosts, if you're dating ghosts, they're going to talk about death.
Surprise. Right.
So
it's the ghost equivalent of The Prisoners. So what are you in for?
Yeah. And there was this sweet little ghost named Hattie, who was an old lady in a retirement home, and she watches over her friends there. And I about bawled my eyes out. Aww. Because of Abuelita passing, yeah. You know, but like, you know, it was still a very, very sweet thing, you know, to go through that. But like, there's, like I said, 12 different ghosts. You have to basically make yourself likable to them, you know.
Right,
and each ghost has a different personality with a different aim and everything, so you know. Mm-hmm. It's not very hard to do that. When I first picked up the game, I intentionally was like, oh, ew, I don't like this guy, so I don't want to. There was like a really super super anxious ghost that was just like freaking out about everything, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be around a very anxious
not vibing with this.
Just like, yeah, that's just like really, like, because you know, I was playing this last week. I don't need any more anxiety. Like, you know, like, okay.
Yeah.
And so like I intentionally picked stuff that would not jive with that character, and then I never did get to play the end of that particular character's path. But after that, I ended up just making myself likable to everybody so I could see everybody's path.
Right.
Anyway, it's still a fun little, very, very light and easy, simple game, you know, with just, it plays out like a text venture for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
There's images, but it's not, it's just like little animations of the little ghosties. It's not like animations of where you go on your date or anything. That's all text.
Yeah. How quick are the individual story lines, the individual paths
for a given ghost? I think for the entire game it's like maybe 2 or 3 hours tops. Mm-hmm. For the entire thing. So like each individual, like, because it the game saves after you finish the speed dating rounds, and then after you finish the rounds in any particular, because there's three different rooms that you can pick from that have three ghosts a piece in them, and mm-hmm. then there's like an extra section that unlocks after you've dated everybody.
Okay.
And like when you go to that room and you go through the speed dating rounds, you do that once. The next time that you go back to that room, if you want to date the other ghosts after you finish, you know, the first date that you go on, you just go back to that room and you can just date another ghost without having to go through that speed dating part again. So
gotcha.
It doesn't have any overlap that way, and I really like that. I appreciate that. As somebody who has played lots of visual novels, I appreciate not having that overlap. So
yeah. the art style on this is just super charming. It reminds me of Undertale. Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Yeah.
And then too, just the sound effects that they have for each of the different characters when they talk and things like that, it's worth having the volume on as well, because it's really kind of cute the way that they have the sound design as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but it's just like a silly random thing I picked up because it was on sale, as I always do. So, you know, charming, as long as you are aware, like, you know, subject matter.
Yeah.
But other than that, I would definitely recommend it. So fun, cool. Light, easy, and done. So any questions about speed dating for ghosts?
No, it looks cool.
Not for me.
Cool.
I like that there are more, that there are more shorter, you know, short visual novel games of that type.
I want to see a crossover of this and Phasmophobia.
Oh, man. I am so sad that you guys did not get to see what I did when I was an undead ghost type thing that you couldn't see. Because, like, boy, what was on my screen would have been so great for everybody watching.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Have the game transition to, like... Yeah. Guess who it is? They cover your eyes.
Right. So, well, anyway, I got one more game to talk about.
Cool.
It's called Kakapo Run. Now, it is a free endless runner about the severely endangered Kakapo flightless parrot of New Zealand. If you follow me on Twitter at all, you have seen many kakapo on my timeline because I love them and I follow conservation biologists, people that, you know, work avidly to protect them.
They are good birds.
They are so good. They are called the owl parrot. They live about 100 years. They are like flightless. They are the largest and the heaviest parrot. But they are very slow until they decide to go, and then they go very fast. They are great. I love them. So anyway, the game has no advertisements and has no in-app purchases. It is 100% free, absolutely free, no ads, no nothing. The kakapo, there's only about 200 left in the world on 4 small islands off the coast of New Zealand. So this game was made for On the Edge Conservation, which is a foundation dedicated to championing the most endangered species around the globe. EDGE itself is an acronym for evolutionarily distinct and globally endangered. So in the game, you play as a kakapo who has to go to safety on Sanctuary Island. And every level begins with the cry of a Haas eagle, which is a huge raptor that used to be the main natural predator for the kakapo, but is now extinct. The kakapo in the beginning has a little animation where it freezes in place, which is what it always does to avoid being seen by predators because it's green and it blends in with the underbrush and everything. Then it starts to run for its life. And as I said before, kakapo are exceptionally fast. So you are running as a kakapo through the forest or whatever. And as you progress through the level, you need to dodge obstacles, but also knock out or evade predators like rats and stoats, which European settlers brought along with dogs and cats, all of which are now the predators of the kakapo. And those are the ones which drove them to the edge of extinction. So thanks, European settlers.
Yeah, specifically birds. Birds respond, or not birds, cats responsible for deaths of billions of birds every single year.
Yeah. But
that's why I keep mine indoors.
Yeah. Well, in New Zealand, it's stoats that were mostly the biggest things. Stoats and dogs really were the biggest ones. Anyway, in the game, you also gather their favorite nuts, which is actually a key to their breeding season. Like if the nuts on this tree that they eat from are plentiful that year, they have a better breeding season. So, and they only breed like once every 4 years is some ridiculousness, but it's tied to the nuts of this tree and that, you know, flower only just so often. And that has something to do with the reproduction cycle. So, you also get to save other kakapo who are on the way. So the thing is that it makes me feel really bad if I don't get one because I'm like, no, there's only 200. I need to go back and get him. You know,
it's a real weird version of those Prinny games.
So the neat thing about this game is that it actually incorporates real kakapo calls and it has lots of tidbits of information about them in between levels as well. So the Infinite Runner style was the type of game chosen to show how kakapo are constantly fighting for their species' very existence. So research has shown, the reason why they released this game in the first place is that research has shown that when folks play this game over another of its type, they naturally become more aware of the ecological impact because of all the little sound bites and information throughout. And they end up feeling more likely to volunteer for a conservation organization. So it's like, that kind of an effort to just get awareness for these neat, very cool and extremely endangered birds, you know, out there in the world. And I am going to eventually adopt a kakapo because they send you a stuffed kakapo.
Well, and also it's a good thing to do.
But yes, I know this is not for the stuffed animal. It's because I love kakapo, but also they send you a cute stuffed animal of a kakapo.
Yes. And this is a strange question. You might know the answer to it. Is the kakapo, is that the bird that, like, there's a famous video of it attempting to mate with a guy's head?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
There we are. Yeah. Yep.
That's the party parrot. That party parrot is a Kakapo. Like that, that little animation. That little animation that I always use for everybody's birthday in the Slack. Mm-hmm. That is, that's a Kakapo.
There we go. I just posted
the dancing bird.
Love
that
it.
Flashes rainbow colors as a Kakapo. Indeed, mm-hmm. I love it. So that's all I've been playing. These things.
Very good. Love a I love a good you know, good serious game. Good game for good cause.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's a good little solid endless runner.
Yeah. So. Been a while since I played one of those. Every once in a while I fire a Cannibalt, but that has not led me to you know, save more birds than I usually do. It just mostly makes me think about buildings falling down. Oh.
So what? Does tear down, Cole. So does tear down.
True. Whoa, we're segueing, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Why don't we? Yeah, let's do that. So I've got a cool one to talk about. I am a real evangelist for this game. I saw people talking about it on Twitter. It's a game called Teardown. This is a first person, like a first person petty crimes game that is available in early access. If you're looking at it, what's that?
Mechanically, it kind of feels like a 3D Noita.
Yeah, Noita being the kind of the platformer game you talked about last time, where every pixel is modeled with physics, mm-hmm. like it's entirely simulated. Yeah. So to speak to that, visually, everything in this game is done with a voxel. Okay, so picture Minecraft, except with the blocks being much smaller. It would actually be probably closer to if you played on the PlayStation 3 3D.GameHeroes. In terms of that kind of visual effect, everything, you know, from the houses to the buildings to even the vehicles that you can drive around is made up of these small little blocks. You play as a demolitions guy. And just a general criminal for hire who takes on jobs to go and either destroy buildings for insurance reasons, steal cars or destroy cars for insurance reasons, or like just steal things from these heavily guarded properties, these heavily secured properties, you know, for money and to. Honestly, for the love of the game, because you get a ton of really fun tools to go and knock stuff down, starting with your sledgehammer and going up to like guns.
Yeah, I like how that was an unlockable tool.
Yeah,
handgun.
Like here's a gun. Just like one of the best ways to open doors is this shotgun here. And there are some materials that can't be broken through with your sledgehammer and need explosives. So you have like pipe bombs and stuff. And sometimes you just need to hop into a vehicle and drive that through a wall. So like there's a little bit of like Red Faction guerrilla DNA to this as well. That also was a game, an open world game where you were tearing stuff down. This is not open world. This is more similar to like a Hitman almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you have a job that you're supposed to do, and you have like bonus objectives that you can do alongside it. Where it gets tricky, and actually like where the interest of the game comes from, because there's like a sandbox mode that is less interesting than the actual game to me. Yeah, like the actual game, most of the time, a good portion of the missions, they have they have alarms on the things you're either supposed to. Steal, or sometimes the things you're supposed to destroy. Like, you know, if the mission is to like steal this many cars and drive them into the river, well, some of them are going to have alarms on them. Regardless of, you know, how big the map is and how many targets you have, once you trip your first alarm, you have 60 seconds to finish the mission and get to your escape vehicle. Okay. And so what you have to do is kind of engage in this bifurcated play where there's an extended planning section where you're going, checking out every single target and planning your route for how you're going to get around to each of these individual things. in order to take them and do what you need to do. This will sometimes involve like, all right, this wall has to come down, this door has to come down. I need to use these planks to build like a ramp. I need to move these things over here to to make a platform. Like, all right, I'm gonna need to jump across this body of water. Let me drive some boats around and put them in place so I can jump across them. That way I don't have to go all the way around the dock. Right.
I saw you play one mission where you did this, where you like lined up four cars in a row where it's like drive to a building, run a hole into it, grab something, jump into this other car that I placed, go to the next building, run a hole into it, and grab another thing.
And you plan this entire thing out, and it has to be incredibly optimized at some of the harder levels. And so you can go on my Twitter. I have shared, these are also shared as highlights or clips on Twitch, just these 1 minute runs where it gets down to less than a second as I'm like leaping at my escape vehicle, trying to activate it before the cops arrive in the helicopter to get away. It comes down to like that thin of a margin, and it's fucking exhilarating. It is so good, you guys. Yeah.
How many levels have you played through so far?
I've probably played somewhere on the order of like 12 missions, something like that. There's a fixed number of maps. You do multiple different missions on each area. Yeah.
Yeah. It does seem like there's a good amount of variety where it's like each level has like a unique mechanic or kind of a unique twist.
Yeah, and like there are even some like I've been streaming this entire thing just intermittently whenever I felt like playing it, and even like in the third session or whatever, you know, well into playing it, it had showed me something different where like your goal was to go and steal these things, but you don't necessarily like there are no alarms on it. The problem is there's a thunderstorm going on. And when you get near structures, lightning will strike the building. The problem is the alarm will go off if the fire gets too big. Like there's a fire sensor. So you go in and you steal the art that you're going to steal, but also you have to use your fire extinguisher to put out the fire that the lightning starts. Or else you're going to get caught because you won't have enough time to do the mission that you need to get all the things that you need if you just let the fires go. So it's this ridiculous thing where you spend the entire game knocking stuff down, and then here's one mission where lightning strikes and you have to try very hard not to have the structure destroyed. Otherwise, you're screwed. Mm-hmm. I love this game, you guys. It is really good, just chaotic fun, but that planning and then the perfect execution that you get and kind of the rapid iteration of like, all right, driving this car around this way is not going to be good. What if I backed up through this window here and then went around the other way? Like the constant corrections that you end up doing. I eventually started like, as I was planning my route, using the spray paint, which I thought was like, oh, that's weird. Like that's probably just for, you know, goofing around, drawing dicks on stuff. But I started using the spray paint to like mark my route. So as I am running, I know exactly where I need to go and like placing down, okay, when you jump out of this window, you want to land on this X because like that will put you in the best place to like jump over this next thing as you get close to it.
I thought you were going to say like you want to land on this picture of a dick and then that'll point to the next one.
I never drew a dick on stream. I did draw a duck
off stream. Yeah.
A duck, not a dick.
Yes. All right. Ducks, not dicks. That's my charity. But Teardown, it's fucking great. I like this. I had attempted to stream the Resident Evil randomizer again this past weekend, but that didn't pan out. So I ended up streaming some Teardown for that and hopefully spread the gospel of it. It's weird because like I was initially really a little bit put off by the fact that it was early access.
Yeah,
it's all here. Like this is functional and good, and I'm looking forward to what else they're going to add to it. But like, I've gotten my $20 worth. It's really fun.
Yeah, I'm surprised when I saw it was in early access because it looks like a completed finished game. Mm-hmm. So
it's a really pretty game too. I mean, it has that kind of like chunkity blocky kind of look to it, but they do a lot of like, there's a ton of like filters and like reflections and like realistic materials, which sounds contradictory.
And the water is realistic too, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. That's just super neat. Do you guys have any questions about Teardown?
No, I popped in a little bit and I saw it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like a little bit. And then I was tired and then
It was a long day.
That was the night that I actually tried to sleep. So I was awake the next night though.
You were. I'll get to what I played the next night, because there was something else that I streamed before that. Over Halloween, I streamed the second game of the Dark Pictures anthology, Little Hope. So people who follow horror games will probably remember Until Dawn, which is the game where the teens are caught in a cabin and they're being chased after by monsters. Kind of a cinematic adventure game where you're kind of making snap decisions and trying not to have people die as the story branches around. Last year I streamed and played Man of Medan, where you're played as a group of people kind of who got stranded on a ghost ship in the South Pacific. This is about some college students and their professor who end up stranded in an abandoned New England town that has a strong history of witch burnings. It's real Silent Hill-y. Like they end up there in a car crash and the fog won't let them leave. And they're being tormented by this young girl who seems to A, have supernatural powers and be a witch, but also is drawing them back to this parallel version of themselves and events that were going on in the past in the 1600s during the witch trials with people who look exactly like them.
You know, when you put it on paper, it does seem awfully legally actionable, but
yeah, it does. You straight up have an Alessa figure here. It is very Silent Hill-y. I liked this game quite a bit. I liked it more than Man of Medan until the ending. I think the ending, it basically trips over its own dick. And I don't want to...
Is that a compliment or an insult?
That is an insult. It is a very clumsy... It's a very clumsy, oafish move to trip over one's dick. it screws it up by making, like, the one mistake that you can't make when you are dealing with supernatural horror like this. It's not exactly it was all a dream, but it's pretty close.
Ooh.
No.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
And not even in the Jacob's Ladder an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, Ambrose Bierce kind of way. That isn't spoiling too much. I think that, you know, anybody who is going to play this, I would still recommend playing it because the ride is actually really good. The monsters that are chasing you around are the versions of the characters that you're playing as who were killed during the witch trials. They come back as monsters with their bodies twisted like the to match their execution. So like one guy, he was killed by being pushed onto a bunch of spikes. So his monster form, he's all twisted, but he's walking around on these like fence rails, like stilts. One person was drowned, like tied up in chains and thrown into the river. They're a chain monster who can whip them around and like tie people up with them and stuff. It's really cool and evocative and amazing monster design. And the encounters are all really good. And when it is doing the parallel storyline with the witch trial and the people stuck in modern day, that is all really cool. It's just, I kind of spoiled the ending there a little bit because I don't want people to think that it's going to add up to an awful lot. I think if your expectations are set, you are going to probably be a little bit happier than I was when I realized what it was doing, because it seemed like it was swinging for a cooler fence than the most cliche thing you could do.
So, I missed all the monsters when you were playing. Like, I popped in and out, and I missed, like, the setup, and then I was like, oh, there must have been a monster, because everybody's freaking out, and all whatever. Like, I missed all the monsters, and then I missed the setup, and then I didn't see the ending. So, like, I just failed to see anything of importance with this game. But it looked interesting from the tidbits I saw of it, anyway.
Yeah, so compared to, like, Until Dawn, it seems like it's, like, what, 50 or 25% of that game or so? Is that right?
About, yeah, yeah. And so, Until Dawn was like a four-sitting game. This is a two-sitting game.
Okay. So, like, quality-wise, how does it compare with Until Dawn? Because definitely with Until Dawn, there were a lot of, like, corny parts or, like, some questionable parts. But, like, there were also a lot of good things in there as well.
Yeah. I would say the corniness and questionability are still on the table here. The writing is not necessarily elegant. I think that it is poorly localized. And they had like a voiceover or performance director who did not feel empowered to say, hey, what you're having them say doesn't make any sense.
Wait, is this not an English game?
I think that this studio specifically is super massive. I think that they're like a Central European studio.
Okay.
Yeah, let me take a quick look here to make sure I'm not talking out of my ass, which is possible. Yeah, I can't find anything about where they're from. Oh well. But yeah, there's certain let's say just like turns of phrase that nobody would use.
Gotcha.
So there's corniness, there's goofiness, but it's not necessarily like something that will break it. Oh, they're based out of Surrey, so this is straight up like an English studio. There's no excuse for them. I was making excuses for them.
The logic still holds. The localization for British and English could lead to some troubles.
Like, nobody would say it that way. Huh. I was making excuses for them on the stream, so I feel a bit like a dummy, but oh well.
you're just a very charitable person.
Yeah. So it's cool, you know, and the ending was not bad enough where I don't want to play the third one. At the end of this, they announced they announced the next one called House of Ashes. Takes place like in some like ruins beneath like ancient Sumeria, which looks pretty cool. I still have faith that they can do cool stuff. Like, the ratio of good to bad is still favorable enough that I'm down.
Yeah, I haven't picked up any of these games yet, and I don't know what I'm waiting for, because I did like Until Dawn, and I had a lot of appreciation for that game, even though it had plenty of flaws in it, just because of how unique the game was. I don't know what I'm waiting for. I'm probably just going to wait for it to go on sale or something before I play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, and like Man and Medan goes on sale, and I'm positive that there's a bundle where you can get both of them cheap.
And this has the one British actor, the guy who is in a Black Mirror episode, I know, and I think Son of Rambo, I think, was one of his first movies.
The main character, the headliner character, was in Midsommar. He was like a secondary character in Midsommar.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, I forget. Oh, Will Porter, Poulter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
This is a good job. Yeah. Any other questions about Little Hope?
It's just an interesting name as well.
Little Hope is the name of the town, but also it's a fun pun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And finally, because I was looking for a one-nighter, I streamed a game at your recommendation, Jala. This is a game that you talked about the last time you were on. So I won't have to go into too much detail about this. You can go back and listen to it. I streamed Dark Knights with Poe and Monroe. This is an FMV game. It is made by the same people who made The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker. It is in the same universe as, I think even set in the same town, as The Shapeshifting Detective.
Yes, it's the same town.
Yeah. The idea is you are playing as two hosts of like a late night spooky radio show. It is the only radio show that is run out of the small English town. The hosts are Poe, who's the guy, Monroe, who's the who's the lady, and there are six episodes, and in each of them something spooky happens, and you make choices by clicking on certain hotspots that will affect the way that each of these individual stories goes. This is less interactive than Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker is, and that is fine, because this is just like a little way to watch interactive television episodes is what it feels like. I wish that it was clearer what you were choosing between. The individual hotspots are a little vague for my tastes. I would say a skosh more vague than like Mass Effect, when you have like a one word prompt for when you're selecting your conversation thing. The stakes are not terribly high, though, so it's not a huge worry. I think the thing that you're here for, if you're playing this, is kind of the overall tone and campiness. And I gotta say, it's hard to think of something that has exactly this kind of energy to it.
There's super charming, at least to me. Like, I absolutely adore it, and I'm like, I want more of these characters in particular. Even, I mean, like, I like all of the entries in this series for different reasons, but it feels like they kind of hit their stride with that weird, quirky, like, there's spooky supernatural stuff going on, and, you know, there's funny stuff going on, there's, you know, all different kinds of stuff all at the same time just thrown into the mix.
Yeah. So it's like spooky, funny, but you gotta be ready for some horny to this. There's like the in the relationship between Poem and Ro, which is a running plot. What exactly are they to each other? And the way that these actors work with each other, there's a certain belligerent horniness between them that I was not necessarily prepared for. I eventually warmed up to both of them. My initial read on Poe was that he's a fucking creep. I think he still might be a fucking creep.
Well, you went a different path in some of the episodes than I did. You didn't get to see Monroe be a complete psycho nut. Oh yeah. My God. That's a thing that happens. And that's the way it panned out for me in some instances. So I got to see both of them acting nuts. And so, like, Monroe, in one instance, depending upon what you select, almost kills Poe for money. So, and like, does it on purpose. He's in the hospital and she's just like, I got paid.
Yeah, I also think that like the way that they decide to introduce Poe is to like have him straight up murder somebody in front of her in a very possessive gesture, and he's doing some like pretty like, let's say, moderate gaslighting on her too. Ultimately it comes out in the wash.
Well, the thing is in that episode, the first episode, you can pick Monroe and have Monroe answer the door instead of Poe.
Oh.
So I don't know if that murder happens or what happens in that case, because I ended up picking Poe just like you did.
Yeah.
And so he answered the door and then killed the guy. But like that, I don't know if that's how it plays out.
Yeah.
If Monroe answers it, so
yeah, and you know, if I am not using this term derogatorily, like, this has a real big community theater kind of energy to it. I say this as somebody who has done lots of community theater, thinks it's really fun, but like that kind of belligerent horniness and like we're just here to have a good time, kind of vibe feels very familiar, but specifically between these two characters, and whenever they get a third in. Or, you know, whenever they have like supporting actors, kind of in.
It's, well, they had the same kind of vibe going on in Dr. Decker with Mariana, the character Mariana, and that actress actually plays a character in Shapeshifting Detective, who is the same kind of, has that sexy vibe going for her, and then also is in Poe and Monroe, but your choices led you to talking to somebody else, so you didn't get to see the sexy part between Monroe and this other girl. But like, you know, like there are other characters who have that same vibe, and it's kind of like a running undertone with a lot of these. But that's because the studio, I think it's because I might be just putting words out there that I'm just projecting onto it, but like, they began life as a murder mystery dinner theater kind of thing. So you that for that kind of a situation, you'd have a lot of couples and, you know, things like that, parties for, you know, probably people's weddings or birthdays or whatever. And, you know, I'm sure that some of that, you know, sexy stuff is just part and parcel of those kinds of murder mystery dinner theater things. So, that being the case, like that, it makes a lot of sense to me. So like, I wasn't surprised by it or anything. And it's not like they have any out and out. Here's people having sex on the screen.
No,
it's definitely a vibe, you know?
Yeah. It never rises above the vibe level. And then like, you know, interactions between them, which I found myself being more invested in, as time went on and as understood that they are both just fucking weirdos.
They are.
Yeah, but this is cool. I really liked the Dr. Decker episode that was thrown in there. I think they did something really clever, which is, you know, they had the same set obviously, and it was structured like you were, you know, in, you know, talking to Monroe as if she was a patient and she's telling you a cool horror story or whatever, but they lit it like Dr. Decker, and they also did the makeup and costuming to make her look like a character, like from that world, like a little bit less glamorous than the Poe and Monroe shots, which I thought from a production details kind of perspective was actually like really convincing and kind of like breaking the fourth wall a little bit. It felt like an expansion to Dr. Decker kind of like embedded in this game.
And the episode right before that was the homage to Shapeshifting Detective. And that one, I will say, is also in the style of the Shapeshifting Detective. It, you know, looks like it was lifted out of that game and put in here.
Yeah.
So like those were, you know, definitely paid attention to and put in there rather lovingly.
Yeah.
But yeah, for sure. That was definitely a detail that I noticed and appreciated. But when I went back and I watched you playing it, that's when I picked up on the Shapeshifting Detective stuff, because I hadn't played Shapeshifting Detective when I played Poe and Michael. So when I went back, I was like, oh, this is exactly like Shapeshifting Detective. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to have played either of those games to appreciate the overall thing that's going on. But yeah. There's more there for you if you have played the other two games for sure. But yeah.
It's neat. Ben, do you have any questions about Dark Knights of Poe and Monroe?
I saw a little bit of it. I don't think it's for me.
It is certainly its own kind of thing. Yeah. Ben, I want to hear what you've been playing.
All right. I'm going to throw this one in. This is a loop fit for video games play, but I was reminded of it. Jala talked about the party parrot game. I only say that because I forget the bird's name already, because my memory is all Kakabo. I played a game called Harmony Square over the weekend, which is a game that's made by college, I think maybe like Harvard or something like that. But it's a game that is supposed to, you role play as somebody who's putting out disinformation and rising the ranks of a disinformation corporation. I call it a loose fit for a game because there's not a lot of agency you can have in this sort of thing. It's a lot of, the main game mechanic is dialogue with your boss, talking about like how you can put out messages. And there's a few choices of like what type of messaging you put out. But like the most it ever branches out is you might have like one of three options to do something. And typically it funnels down to one choice. But the experience is interesting because it kind of puts you in this perspective of like the trajectory of like how you go about like putting in disinformation and then like getting it to stick to whoever you're trying to target. The point of why they made this game is they wanted people to get better at recognizing disinformation campaigns, which US is pretty bad at since we just haven't had a lot of experience with having it.
Right.
So it's a small game. It's only like 10 or 15 minutes. There's not too much to say about it besides it being probably good for people to go through. So maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
It's an interesting idea. I wonder if it would serve as like a good proof of concept for a bigger thing. I like the idea of helping you understand kind of the anatomy of a disinformation, a piece of disinformation, because you are like, this game is putting you in the shoes of somebody who has to make it, you know, like, oh, like here are the parts that you need to put together for this.
Yeah, and they do a good job of like doing check posting or checkpointing, where it's like they have like a ticker on the top of it where it's kind of like the news stories for the town. It's like this small like town, and the name of the town, I think it's the name of the game, Harmony Square, is like the square that's in the center of the small town. And mm-hmm. the idea is you're trying to bring up this controversy about the town square and get people to start fighting over it. Yeah. And so it goes from being like a happy, quaint little town to like people like starting to be like, we need to take action about this statue, you know, and stuff like that. So it gets pretty dark pretty quickly.
It's a thing that happened. Like there were actual like rallies and protests that were put together in 2016. Pro and anti-Trump stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely good to experience that sort of thing in a video game instead mm-hmm. of real life, so yeah. That's like another kind of encouragement to play, but you know, it's a small game, so if you play it, you play it. Cool. I'm gonna move on. Another game I've been playing that I want to just go over quickly is I picked up and started playing a game called Supraland.
I want to hear about this.
It's a literal sandbox game because it takes place in a sandbox. I think the setting is like you're in a sandbox and you're like this toy. And so you're kind of running around the sandbox and like doing different like puzzles. They bill it as like a Metroid / Zelda / Portal game. It's not as good as any of those three games, but it has like an exploration mechanic where you go to different areas and like do puzzles there, and then you kind of come back to your main area. There's a little bit of Metroid stuff in there, but not like a whole lot of it. The thing that's kind of interesting is it's a very like simple upgrade system where it's like you kind of go and do these puzzles and you unlock either coins or barrels. Coins is like the economy that you can buy upgrades, where it's like you either do more damage or you like move in a different way, like unlock like a double jump or move faster, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The thing that's cool about it is the way you get to new areas is basically by unlocking new movements. So like if you upgrade your movement speed enough, you might be able to jump far enough to bridge a gap to go into this other area and then do some puzzles over there. If you unlock this like triple jump, then you might be able to jump high enough to get into this other area that's over here. So it's kind of like a very like seamless way. It's not like it's not as much like here's your grappling hook to open these grappling hook doors, you know.
Yeah, it's not the Tomb Raider 2013 Metroidvania.
Yeah. So I appreciated that part about it. But like on the whole, it's kind of just an okay game. It's kind of, we were talking about like, Phasmophobia being kind of like a Unity Store, like display. Mm-hmm. This in one sense is kind of like that, where it's like, it feels like a kind of less polished game where, you know, from my perspective, it feels like I'm like in the Unity editor, like messing around with a game sort of thing, you know? And the other piece of it too is like, it doesn't really have a good, like overarching narrative. Like, and it doesn't really take that seriously. Like literally you're given two missions in the game where you're going to get a MacGuffin, a literal MacGuffin is what it's called. which is like, it's cute the first time they do it. The second time they do it, it's like, oh, like you just don't have a story here, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's weird too, is like they'll throw in random characters throughout the game. And it'll be like these, it's like this weird thing, like there's like a Donald Trump character in the game that serves no purpose other than to like, it says like quotes that Donald Trump says and stuff like that. Or there's like one where it's like, I think it's like a dead Link from Zelda or something like that. It's these like weird like pop culture references, kind of like in a Borderlands game, but they're not like, they're not subtle at all. And they're just, it's just kind of there for no reason, you know?
Yeah.
So that part feels like a little unpolished as well. The puzzles themselves are pretty good. It's just a weird game. It's just a weird tiny game. I had been recommended this from a friend who watches the same puzzle game streamer that I do. Mm-hmm. And I think it has like good ratings on Steam, but I think it even has like overwhelmingly positive on Steam. I don't think it's that strong of an entry. It's like, it's not a bad game, but it's not like a mind-blowing game. So
The thing that makes me curious about this is that it is a game that is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It Grounded sounded interesting to me, but I did not want to play a multiplayer game. Like I didn't want to mess around with that. Where you are running around an environment that is made up of, you know, regular size things just that kind of fell into the sandbox. That sounds charming to me. I don't know if that sounds $20 charming. for that conceit.
And I don't think that that stuff is particularly well done. Like, there might be some places where there's like a giant eraser, like pencil eraser, that is a platform for you or something like that. But there's still plenty of conceit to that. There's still plenty of like buildings that are just platformy buildings that have no real world use at all, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. Again, damp praise on this one. It's not a bad game. Like, if someone were to give you this game for free, yeah, it's worth like taking a spin on it for a day or two, but I don't know if I'd go out of my way for buying it if it wasn't on sale.
Were you playing this on PC or were you playing it on Switch?
I was playing it on PC.
Gotcha.
All right. I got two more things I want to talk about. So move on. I picked up Ring Fit Adventure on the Switch.
Cool.
That game's sweet. It's been on my wish list for a while. I think I put it on like back almost like half a year to almost three quarters of a year ago when it was like all the rage and sold out everywhere. Oh, yeah. So I finally saw that it was like back in stock. And so I got that. I played maybe two or three maps of it. It is just exercise in disguise, but it is it is like sugar on your vegetables. It makes it very easy to exercise with this, and it makes it very fun. So between like rowing and this, this is a lot more fun. So
rowing is boring.
So I don't mind doing this. It does have like a good variety. It is a great tech demo for the Switch. So that part I can see like why people are into it from that sense. For people who don't know this game at all, it's basically the Switch's version of like the Wii Fit. But what it is it's like a RPG exercise game. It comes with one peripheral, which is a ring that like when you push it in gives you like resistance training, or you can pull it out and it does the same sort of thing. So it's just like kind of rubbery ring that you also put a Joy-Con on. And then it also has a Joy-Con holder that's like a strap that you wrap around your thigh.
Okay.
And those are the only two things you have. And so with that, you get a surprising amount of things that you can do. So like some of the exercises you can do, like one, for example, you could just set the Joy-Con on the ground and just do like crunches, and it'll just measure where your thigh placement is for whether or not you're doing crunches. But you can do other things, like you can do like overhead resistance training. You can do this weird like swaying exercise to like help your back. They try and gamify it where you basically go through levels, and the levels you're basically running through from start to end. So I guess it's kind of analogous to like maybe like a Crash Bandicoot type game where it's like you're stuck on a lane. Or maybe like Pokemon Snap or something. You're stuck on a lane that you're going through the map, and there's like a lot of pretty scenery around you. And then there's like limited interactions you can have with it. You are physically running when you run through the map. And in that sense, I mean, you're like jogging in place. And it measures it again through your thigh strap. If you jog faster, then your character moves faster. Mm-hmm. But it's just like a two-tier system, or I guess three-tier system. You're either not running, or running really fast based on how quickly your thigh is moving.
This sounds really similar. It wasn't Wii Fit, but it was EA Sports Active, I think is what it was. It was for the Wii. You held on to the Wii remote, but you put the nunchuck in a thigh strap. And like it came with a resistance band and stuff like that, and you ran through exercises. I had that and did it until I broke the resistance band, and then I didn't do it anymore.
Yeah. So that's something I definitely appreciate. I don't know how long the like ring will last or not, but it definitely seems very durable.
I've seen aftermarket ones available as well, especially in the height of the COVID pandemic when it was most sold out. There were people making third party ones, so it doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to get a hold a replacement if something did happen.
Yeah. So let me talk more about the mechanics of the game. So as you're running through these maps, you'll basically come into these like Pokemon fights, for lack of a better word. You like stop at these monsters and you fight them. The way you fight them is you do different exercises, like the ones that I was talking about before. They gamify it in that they color code the exercises by like what they work out of you, like whether it's like your abs or your arms or legs or something like that. And each of the monsters will have different colors. And so basically it's color coded so that the exercise of the matching color is like super effective against that one. Mm-hmm. And then you unlock new exercises that will target more monsters. So you might target like 3 at a time or 5 at a time or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so you have to try and defeat them all without dying, I guess. There's their form of a health potion is smoothies that you can buy, like a broccoli smoothie, something like that, as a way to try and like teach you like how to make smoothies, I guess, in real life, if you wanted mm-hmm. to do that. I don't know how far that'll go or not, but yeah, I don't know. It's nice that they try and do all these things kind of to gamify it and make it more enjoyable. But basically it's just like a glorified like way to exercise in your house, which is really useful right now during COVID times. But yeah, I don't know. It's not bad. I don't know. Do you guys have any questions about it?
No, it sounds cool to me. I've never heard anything bad about it. People have, the worst thing that people have said is that it kicks their ass a little bit too much. But that's not a bad thing in a fitness product. So
there's a nice feature where it'll like ask you every day, like, oh, is this good or is it too hard? Mm-hmm. And it'll like tweak the difficulty based on that. So that's nice. That's really nice. And it gives you options like, do you want to do stretching like at the end of the day or the beginning of the day, like to warm up and cool down? Mm-hmm. Each time you do a level afterwards, you have the option of measuring your pulse with the IR sensor on the Joy-Con.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so like that's all really nice. And then like even after you do a couple different stages, it'll be like, hey, why don't you take a break for the day? Like you've done a good job, you know, and stuff like that. So it's like it's very encouraging, you know. So it's like a nice like virtual trainer in that sense.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. There's a bunch of people in the wellness chat. So there's listeners who do the Ring Fit thing. There's like an avid group of people who play Ring Fit actively in the wellness channel mm-hmm. in the Slack. So there's more people if you want to chat or whatever kind of interactions there are with other humans that you can do in Ring Fit. I know there are some. You can go there and chat with those people about that.
Sweet.
Nice. Yeah. That's cool.
All right, last game I have to talk about is a game called Manifold Garden.
Oh, sure, yeah. This game looks trippy as fuck.
Yeah, it came out like a year ago, but it was an exclusive to Epic Games Store, I think, for a little bit.
It was Apple Arcade is what it was exclusive to.
Oh, okay, all right. It is now released like full. I know the background on this is I think they got money from like there's a studio called like Indie Games Fund that I think Jonathan Blow started. I think they got some of their funding through that. The comparison I think is to what's the one game called?
Anti-Chamber.
Yeah, it's like Anti-Chamber, but instead of having like the cute like Fallout type humor, it is just like pure mathematician wet dream sort of thing. Where the main mechanic of the game is you can change the direction of gravity by like walking up to a wall and then pressing like right click. If you do that, gravity is now like whatever that surface is going down towards whatever that surface
is. It is normal to that surface.
Yeah. And they color code it. So like the color of all the surfaces are based on which way gravity is. So there's 6 different ways you can do it. So there's 6 different colors. The level. And then the thing about it is all the levels are repeated infinitely in the space that you're in. So the idea is like I could walk up to 2 floors to get to like the door where I need to go is, or I could throw my body off into the abyss, fall down to the next copy of this map, but then land on that floor 2 floors above where I am. And it's like there's a lot of weird like repeated spaces that they have in the game, and like, yeah, as you mentioned, all of that is like very trippy. Some of them are way more awe-inspiring than others. So it takes a little bit of a ramp up to wrap your head around like how that stuff works, but once you get going, it's a really good game. It's like maybe 4 to 6 hours, maybe. It's not like a terribly long game. But it's a very polished game, and it doesn't like overstay its welcome. I only have like one minor complaint is there's like one game mechanic that they don't really tell you how to do, and I had to look that up. But other than that, it was like a very, very satisfying experience. Yeah, it's definitely like it's I haven't seen another game like it. You know what I mean? Like it's like it has it's very it has its own signature, I guess. Yeah. So it's very unique. It's very cool if you like repeated patterns and mathematically pleasing type things. So
I love the visual style of this, like that, like it is both like muted, but also neon.
Yeah, I think one of my friend's girlfriend said it looked like it was made in like SketchUp or was whatever the architect like software is that you design houses in.
It's a little bit CAD-y.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's very pretty. The only thing I wish it could do is like I wish there would be more like I wish it was like Monument Valley where there's more like impossible geometry going on. But I shouldn't like try and say that this game is very well done in what it was trying to do. Just like now I want a sequel to do a couple more things, I guess. I don't know. This was the favorite game that I had played in like the past 2 weeks. So
nice.
So
yeah. Ooh, that's coming out on the Xbox Series X. So I can play it like in cool 4K on my TV and it'll look baller.
Sometime.
I don't know if this is VR supported or not, but it would be very awesome if it was.
Oh god. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm actually curious if it's VR supported, because that sounds like a good match.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And it's weird too. The cover of this game where it's like this infinite staircase sort of thing that looks like a scene out of The Fall. I don't even remember seeing that in game, so maybe there's things that I'm already missing. So,
anything else about Manifold Garden?
It's sweet. I highly recommend it if you like mathy type things. So,
very cool. That sounds like a segment to me.
It is a segment.
It seemed like a good segment for three people.
I know, meaty. It was a meaty segment.
Yeah, I was about to say that exactly.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, you're the one who asked the question. What did you ask the nice people?
I asked, what would your favorite video game hero be as a villain? What type of a game would it be? What turned them to the side of evil? Who would be their nemesis? That kind of a thing.
I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, Mario is an easy one. One day, he just gets fed up with having to save the princess in her kingdom for the 100th time, so he decides to go rogue, do it better than Bowser, and turn evil. He'd steal her away. He'd steal her away in her own castle, enslave everyone, collect all the coins and power-ups and cool devices for himself, and taunt anyone who tried to stop him with his jumping and running skills. Until finally, he's defeated by his own brother Luigi in an epic showdown. Mario is then exiled, and Luigi goes on to become the hero of the land that I play the heck out of this if it was a game. you're describing a theory about about where Wario comes from, actually. Yeah. Which is Wario, what happens if he does exactly that? Or sorry, so Wario is what happens when Mario gets greedy and becomes lazy and a dick. So there are, you know, basically it is the worst case version of Mario. So not too far off there. Let's see here. Ben, what does Thomas say?
Thomas says, watching the Venture Bros along with Orb, I don't know which one.
Orb
has made me crave a management sim where you play as a supervillain running an evil organization. It would be a blast to play as the Monarch, Baron Underbite, or some of the over-the-top cartoon evildoer as you build your secret lair, design stylish outfits for your henchmen, and pursue improbable plots to ruin Dr. Venture and achieve fame and notoriety.
What you're describing is very close to a game called Evil Genius. In fact, there's an Evil Genius 2 that's going to be coming out. Evil Genius, the first one, came out in the late 90s, kind of as a follow-up to Dungeon Keeper, actually. It has kind of like a Austin Powers kind of feel to it. So you may get what you want if you try out Evil Genius or Evil Genius 2, if it ever does come out. Yeah. And then Jella, read the last one here. This is a very short segment because not many people answered. You know, it's been a week. So, Jolly,
Dave,
yeah.
Dave says, at the end of Katamari Damacy, the prince, frustrated by his efforts and the mishaps of his father, usurps him and becomes the new king of all cosmos, where he ultimately rules the cosmos with an iron fist to prevent it from further ruination, with the aim that no one should ever have to roll worlds up again. Thus, he divides the cosmos up into sections controlled by his various cousins that he oversees. Eventually, factions form and the cosmos is embroiled in war over control of the most resource-heavy planets. The new hero would be one of the prince's cousins seeking to restore unity and balance, and the game would be a turn-based tactical RPG in the style of Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
The Romance of the Three Cosmos.
Yeah, right? That is a very thorough answer there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll do mine. It's real quick. My favorite game hero right now is the main character of Disco Elysium, the cop. I won't say his name.
Hero?
protagonist. And the real answer is just the same thing, but you engage in all of your vices.
Wait, so is your answer just playing Disco Elysium again, but just doing a different?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah. Play Disco Elysium, but this time just be a bigger jerk.
Hobo cop run.
Hobo cop is not the worst you can do. All you do is pick up bottles. You're actually making Revachol prettier by doing that. Mm-hmm. God, I love that game so fucking much. Ben, how about you?
So I thought about this one. I think I would want a bad version of War. Because that was a game where you're kind of like, you're the white knight, I feel like, most of the way through. I think the only thing, it's like, I think you have an affair, right? At one point, isn't that the one, like...
In L.A. Noir? Yes. Yeah. You have an affair with the German nightclub singer.
Singer, yeah. I forget this with, like, every other movie set at that time. So, but I think if you were, like, an anti-hero cop, or like a corrupt cop, all of the, like, this is the police or something, mm-hmm. the interrogations could be a lot more interesting, where it's, like, there's certain people you might be interrogating where you purposely don't want them to say certain information, or you want to, like, incriminate them, like, when they're not guilty or something like that. It would open up, like, a lot more strategies. Also, I just want to see Rockstar make a good game again, so yeah. This would kind of keep both those things, so.
That wasn't a Rockstar game, that was Team Bondi, and apparently that studio head was an abusive nightmare. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah.
Was it not released through Rockstar?
Rockstar was the publisher, Team Bondi was the developer.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah. Or like 2K Rockstar was the publisher. Like Rockstar only had like a tangential relationship with the actual making of it. It was an Australian studio named Team Bondi.
Okay, sweet.
Yes. Man, that's a good game. I like that. I like your answer. It reminded me that the LA Noir exists. John, yeah,
I also just want another LA Noir too. So it's kind of buried in that end.
Yes. Jala, how about you?
I do not believe that Kirby is on anyone's side but Kirby's, because they already murder their friends regularly. So therefore, it would be much the same as any other Kirby game. Nothing would turn them to the side of evil because they are true neutral and play by their own rules anyway. Their nemesis CCs would be the same as they always have been. Literally nothing is different. Whether Kirby is villain or protagonist.
Negative zero is still zero.
Yes.
What I would like, and not to plus one your answer, but like, what if what we see in a Kirby game is like that's how Kirby views it? But if the reality, if we saw, you know, things not through their point of view, and it was closer to Carrion, where everything was just terrified of Kirby as they roll along.
Well, and that's the thing, is that like the longer I sit and think about Kirby, because I slowly but surely every once in a while play the Kirby All-Stars game every once in a while, it's on my Switch perpetually, mm-hmm. you know, like the more I think about Kirby, the more I'm like, Kirby is just goddamn terrifying.
He's basically Azathoth. He's a howling nothingness. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's extremely cute nothing and terrifying, right. But like,
if you believe Kirby.
Yes. And of course, like all of the 50 million realistic renditions of Kirby that are out in the universe. Like when you start Google image searching that, that's mm-hmm. yeah, something.
Yeah. Nice. Well, thank you everybody for writing in. If you'd like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Jolly, for putting this one up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Jala, what is going on with this Project Discovery? What is that?
So, EVE Online players can help scientists understand COVID-19 by playing a mini game categorizing cells. This helps scientists at McGill University, BC Candor, and frontline COVID-19 clinicians understand the immune system's response to COVID. What you're doing in a gamified fashion with in-game incentives, of course, courtesy of the publisher, mm-hmm. is analyzing data produced by flow cytometers. Flow cytometry is a technique used to detect and measure physical and chemical characteristics of cells, especially those that are from the immune system fighting COVID right now. Mm-hmm. So players use a tracing tool to mark groups of cell populations present in blood, helping scientists understand how different cell populations and types are altered throughout the infection process and, you know, as everything, you know, proceeds and advances. Mm-hmm. So this is the third such MMOS, massively multiplayer online science citizen project, which is a collaboration between CCP Games, who makes EVE Online, and Project Discovery. Previous projects included mapping out the Human Protein Atlas in 2016 mm-hmm. and searching for exoplanets in 2017. So a neato thing that is going on out there in the world, where you get in-game incentives to help science.
It's I love this. It is distributed human computing. Because there mm-hmm. are certain tasks and pattern recognition that computers suck at and the human mind is good at.
Yep.
Love it.
So I saw it and I was like, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And it's, you know, not to like help people raise money, you know, just kind of like there. Sometimes you will see like something that happens online where it's like, ooh, what do you think this image is? And it's very obviously a way to help train AIs or machine learning. mm-hmm. About how to this seems good. They've been doing a bunch of stuff for a while. I remember the protein atlas one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go to ccpgames.com to see that, or do a search for Project Discovery if you would like to participate and yeah. say that you cured COVID. Because it's not technically untrue, and that's the best kind of not untrue. I broke my rule and I brought a story that I'm not necessarily excited about, but it's a tale as old as time, where a company knows that they're putting out a big product and lots of people are going to be buying it, and they think, all right, we have an online service, let's get ready, boys. And like Houdini, they think they're ready for a punch in the gut, but they're not. Then their appendix bursts and they die prematurely.
Wow.
Yeah. Microsoft. That
went some places, all right.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
What's that?
I learned this in magic school as a kid. Is the reason why that happened is he was like going through his mail, and his like assistant or student at the time was like, hey, can I like punch you in the stomach as hard as I can? He's like, Yeah, sure. And then he did it. Uh-huh. When he wasn't expecting it, and so he didn't like flex at all, and that's why.
Yeah, he got sucker punched. It's actually it's a really sad story, because like he did super cool stuff like debunking people. He was a little bit mm-hmm. like a James Randi kind of figure. Mm-hmm. God rest James Randi. He would not appreciate me saying that, actually. Sorry. God rest this notable atheist soul. didn't mean to do that. No, so the actual story is not about Houdini or James Randi, but Microsoft today, as of the day we're recording, was the launch of the Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S, and of course Xbox Live went down. This happened at about 1:01 p.m. Eastern time, probably around the time a lot of people got their shipment on the East Coast from UPS or what have you. This had implications not only for multiplayer games that use the Xbox Live service, but also for single player games. People who wanted to play the fanciest version of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, they ended up not being able to play their game because they needed to sign in to authenticate it, which is, let me check my notes here, a bummer. So Microsoft, they felt like they had the problem solved, but they had their own little launch day version of what happens every single Christmas day. So I don't think that they're ever going to get it right. Not just Microsoft, just everybody who does stuff like just this.
Everyone.
Yeah. Right. There's always going to be. It just, at this point, it seems like a press strategy. Our thing is so popular that the service went down. It makes you look good for making a popular thing, not bad for not anticipating the demand for your service. So, yeah, that's my story. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I just have an update with a game that maybe some people are still playing. Fall Guys. Today, the day that we're recording, they're releasing a mid-season update. Basically, it's the same thing that they did in season one, where they're basically like remixing a lot of the game still, which is a good move because it basically randomizes the maps so that you don't really have like a set in stone strategy for how to deal with each of the maps. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they're doing, I hope to God, is updating. There's a perfect match game, which is where you just look at, you have like a 4x4 grid, and yeah, you look at the screen when it picks a fruit, and you just jump on where it is on the grid. It's like a memory game. Yeah. They have an update for it where there's a giant like spinning bar in the middle of the 4x4 grid now, so that you have to like continually jump over that as you're also trying to like memorize things.
Right. That sounds like a pain in the ass.
Well, that at least it makes it more interesting, and at least it gets people out of the level, because yeah, there's too many times when you play that game where it's like, oh, one person was eliminated out of 40. It
doesn't filter anybody. Yeah.
Way to value my time. Or, well, yeah, whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, that could be cool. The other fun news is that they're going to have a Untitled Goose Game skin for it coming out this Friday. So that's just fun and cute. I think part of the updates, too, is all the skins and costumes that they've had in the store in the past, they're going to have second chances for you to buy them. I don't know if they're going to be like permanently available or if they're just randomly unlocked. Mm-hmm. I think it's the random, like it'll randomly appear in your store, like your store reset. Yeah. So that's cool too, because I do want to get a Gato Roboto costume that I missed.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Cute designs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neat.
Yeah.
God, that goose design is really good too. I've never seen it like outside of the Untitled Goose Game context, mm-hmm, but it's instantly recognizable.
Yeah, it rings true.
Yeah, cool. How do you two feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of The Level. We really appreciate it. Looking at here for programming notes, one thing that I will say, we're probably going to take Thanksgiving week off, probably, so we'll be back next week, and maybe not so much after that. We'll see though. I'm leaning toward that because, you know, this makes sense to me. I don't know otherwise though.
I just run this thing.
yeah. I realized I thought about that, but I didn't discuss it with you with anybody. So
I can do the Tuesday. I'm off Friday and Wednesday on. So
cool. Yeah, we'll figure it out. And if you see an episode that week, or if you see a multiplayer prompt, you'll see that there. Otherwise, though, you know the usual stuff you can do: ratings, reviews, Patreon, things like that. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No.
Okay. I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I'm Jolichon in Blazes.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
I think so. Recently back. He's don't call it a comeback. yeah. And stick around for some titles.
a leg.
Okay, who has Tuttles?
Cole, I have to tell you something.
Okay.
You talked about Dick quite a bit this time.
I apologize.
I got two titles with Dick in them. Okay. So I can't even put them out there, but they're going to be on the A-Toady. So.
Okay. I need to learn. Yeah.
Ducks, not dicks.
Okay.
Trips over one's dick.
Okay.
And then I have two other ones.
Okay.
Negative zero is still zero.
What was that in relation to?
Kirby, evil Kirby.
Gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. Yes.
True neutral. Because, like, actually, many of the answers of the question were like, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay. Well, yeah. That teaches us something about video games, kids. It does. So. Anyway, and then not technically untrue.
Okay. Okay. Ben, what you got?
No titles.
I had a couple that I thought of writing down, but I was doing hosting things and then I didn't write them down. Oh. Unfortunately, I forgot them. I think negative zero is still zero. Takes it.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody loves the math title.
Yeah.
Says the math guy.
Cool. All right. That sounds good. I'm going to go.
Yeah. I'm going to sleep. I need sleep a lot.
Sleep sounds really good, actually.
Hey, guys. GG's on that U.S. election. Pulled it through.
We really did it. I didn't. My vote didn't affect my state, really.
Same.
Everybody I voted for lost. So, yeah. Well.
Apparently, I'm the only one who's okay with the current tax. Got repealed this time around.
I need to see if our tax levy got repealed for the schools. That'd be ridiculous if it did. Oh, yeah. Well. Anyway. Cool. Take care, you guys.
All right.
Night. See you guys.
Good night. Bye.
Saturday.
Yeah. See you Saturday.
All right. Bye. Yeah.